This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. When we talk about Latin social dance and the Latin social dance scene, your mind might jump to New York or Miami. But here in North Carolina and across the states, there is a lively community of dancers. With large gatherings on hold for the moment, two dancers decide to explore the contributions and marginalization of Black dancers and musicians. The Mixtape podcast features the voices of Afro-Latino and African-American dancers in North Carolina. It also breaks down some of the hit songs to provide context on the roots and continued contributions of African artistic styles. Melissa Velotas is a doctoral student of social work at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and co-host of the Mixtape podcast. Hello, Melissa.
Hi, Frank.
Good to have you here. The other co-host, Andres Encapier, who is also an assistant professor of economics at UNC Chapel Hill. Hello, Andres.
Hi, Frank. Thanks for having us.
Good to have you. And one of the titles that I did not use to describe you is that you are both, in fact, Latin social dancers yourselves, so that you're approaching this conversation about race from the inside. Melissa, let me ask you, why is that vantage point important in this project?
Most social dancers, or most people involved in the social dance community, spend a lot of time in the social dance community. This is a very important environment for us as people who spend a lot of time in that space. It's important to have that conversation with, people who have had experiences, have been on the in and outs of it.
And as you both acknowledge, it is an uncomfortable conversation, Andres. Social dance is a community celebration. Why is it important to have these uncomfortable conversations about this activity that's essentially centered around joy?
Exactly. No, it's in a way, we're kind of bringing a little bit of the bomb to the party by saying, hey, we all think of social dancing as this fountain of joy, but we have to sort of also, we want to bring attention to the fact that this is, as one of our listeners once said, it's a microcosm of the greater society. So we can't pretend that this malices that we see in society don't sort of permeate into our great spaces of social dancing.
And Latin social dance is also a huge category and a migratory one. Different categories of Latin dance have taken different routes. So the style of dance might look very different depending on its geographic location or even whether it's dance in a dance hall versus a backyard. Melissa, let's start with salsa as an example. Give us a brief synopsis of salsa's origins and its migration.
Salsa has some origins in New York City, as you mentioned, but a lot of the movement comes from African rhythms that was kind of transmitted to the Caribbean through the transatlantic slave trade. And so, as you're mentioning, it has migrated over time within the diaspora and has taken on a lot of different forms based on location.
But with digital technology, it's really taken on a different form. I mean, a griot in Senegal doesn't have to wait 3 months for a Cuban salsa band CD, right? You can listen hours after it's released, and the whole world seems to know, which allows for the influence to spread. Andres, can you hear African and Latino musicians or dancers in conversation with one another? I mean, this should be an opportunity to really bring things together and not ring out the contributions. How is it working in terms of those conversations?
I think it's working much better than what it used to, precisely because what you're mentioning, right? The fact that one can sample, they can sample each other, they can, talk about the same, or at least try to address similar topics. Before it was harder, it was just that the musician would see this West African band play and they would be like, okay, I want to bring those pieces into my own music. But it wasn't really that they were having that conversation, that artistical conversation. It was more like a little bit of, okay, I go there, I see what the sounds are, then I bring them to my own community. So that was very common, for instance. And there's a song by a Colombian singer, Joy Arroyo, which basically is that. He saw a West African singer. He copied the song because it sounds so great and made it into a salsa song as well. So I think now that we have this channels of communication that has gotten much better, also it's gotten much better to give credit where the credit is due.
So Melissa, what's being left out?
I guess as dancers, we consume this art form through classes. And so what's being left out is that people are instructed on how to dance these styles, but then we miss out on the history behind the movement, especially because a lot of these dances are rooted in religious forms of movement that tell a story and really talk about resilience in communities who have been oppressed. And so that in itself is a huge thing that is missing if we use dance simply as an escape or simply as a source of joy, which it can be an escape and it can be a source of joy, but there's so much more to it that we really feel adds depth to the experience of dancing.
Well, let's get an example of that right here, because one of the wonderful recurring series within your podcast is called Were You Listening? And in that series, you translate and provide context to lyrics by Afro-Latino musicians.
Suelta perro, mayora. Suelta perro, mayora. Cuida con ese marrón.
I love this song. It's a dancer song. This is a song by the Cuban group Habana de Primera and Alexander Abreu, one of my favorite musicians at the moment, featuring Osain Del Monte. This song, in my opinion, masterfully sort of displays the influence, the deep influence of West African rhythms in the culture and rhythms that develop on Afro-Latin music, that you see on Afro-Latin music, in this case of salsa. And it also displays the relevance of the topics that the composers, in this case Alexander Abreu, chooses, which is, in the case of Raza, the killing of George Floyd by a police officer. So he made that into a salsa song.
Let's listen. That's Raza, featured in the Mixtape Podcast, and I'm here with co-host Melissa Velotas and Andres Incapié. Melissa, let's talk a little bit more about how this actually plays out. We talked about sort of theoretically how we're losing the context, how the popularization of this music has caused some of the important content to be lost. How does this show up in the dynamics, the social dynamics on the dance floor?
Well, salsa music is so rich. I mean, you can hear in that song, Raza, and any other salsa song you listen to, there's so many instruments that kind of take you away. The song takes you away just in the instruments alone. And so I know I'm guilty of this. You know, when I hear music, it's easy to listen to the congas and the maracas and the piano and the horns. And you get so caught up in that you're not listening to the words that people are saying. And so I think with the Were You Listening series that Andres has really taken off with, it gives us an opportunity to appreciate the rhythms, but also appreciate the lyrics and the story that it tells.
Tell us more, Andres, the story for those of us who don't speak Spanish that was being told in that song.
Yeah, so basically he started by saying what Melissa highlighted before. So he's saying, you know, you and I are the same, we have the same blood, we feel the same cold when it's cold outside. So there's no reason for you to be, he literally says, there's no reason for you to kill me with your knee on my neck. And that is the reference, direct reference to what happened to George Floyd. So, and then the song continues by saying, you know, we should not, I will say in Spanish, ya llenaste mi vida de muerte. Ya pusiste mi alma en pedazos, ahora llena de flores mis brazos, y al menos déjame quererte. So he's saying, you know, you've been hating us for so long, Now, okay, you want to continue hating us, that's okay, but at least let us love you. So it's saying, you know, we continue to suffer this racism and this discrimination, but we got to move forward, we got to move on. And that is the sort of the love that he's trying to give back in the song, at the end of that song.
So the music plays an important part in this podcast that you have and the context around it. But also you have conversations with North Carolina social dancers. Jordan Elena is from Greensboro and shared her experience of being Black on the dance floor with you all. Let's listen.
There have been nights where I haven't been asked to dance at all. And I noticed that other dancers who, you know, maybe a little newer in their dance journey are being asked consistently, and I'm standing right next to them. And I'm like, I have the dance shoes on, like, you've seen me dance with other people, you know, I'm at least capable. So it's a little frustrating, but I do think that it's wonderful that podcasts like this one are at least providing the space for people to talk about race and colorism. And yeah, it's uncomfortable, but it's important.
Jordan Elena, a model, language interpreter, and social dancer from Greensboro. And Andres, it's not just race that affects these dancers. There's an intersection with gender. Talk about those two dynamics.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. As you know, anybody that listens to this music, most of these songs are composed and performed by men. So you also find, you know, a lot of patriarchal, sexist undertones in the songs. So we're As we kind of move forward with this project mixtape, we've been trying to think, okay, so how can we take a sort of an intersectional approach in which, you know, we also address these issues that are also common, not only in the music, but also things that you see in the dance floor. Of course, this is music that is dancing close position very often. So these ideas of, okay, respect of personal space and consent, it's a very important concept that, you know, it should have been understood many decades ago, but that is kind of picking more and more up with the Me Too movement and these types of movements that are highlighting these issues in the dance community.
And Melissa, when we're talking about the music and some of the ways in which it's been represented and some of what's been left out, I wonder how you distinguish between sort of honoring the music and appropriation. I mean, when is it appropriate to honor somebody else's music by replaying it or sampling it, and when does it become appropriation?
We have a lot of conversation about that in our first few episodes. One conversation that we had with some dance instructors and business owners is that there's this tension because, you know, dancers and choreographers and creators want to have this flexibility to be able to be creative and also to hold true the essence of the movement by which that they are borrowing from. I think it becomes appropriation when it's taken on as your own. You know, if someone is incorporating Afro movement into their dance, but has no respect for African culture and the roots from which that movement comes from, you know, you really cross that line into appropriating it in a way to monetize it for your own gain rather than to really sustain the culture.
You also host conversations about the marginalization of Black women on the dance floor and simultaneously celebrate their foundational role. And I suppose what better example of that is Celia Cruz. So let's listen to just a little bit of Bemba Colora. Bemba Colora, Celia Cruz, and I'm talking today in the State of Things with the co-host of the podcast, Mixtape Podcast. And Andres, talk about how you see this story illustrating the much larger narrative of Black women in Latin dance and music.
the reason why we addressed Bemba Colorá in one of our first episodes was because a Black woman who does ballroom, Lauren Wilmore, my dear friend in New York City, asked me, what did I think about this exact song? Because somebody was kind of using it, a white singer was using it in a band, and she was like feeling weird that this white singer was singing it. And the white singer said, well, you know, this is just a song about a man that is unfaithful to his woman. And then, you know, you can see lipstick in his lips. And that's what the song is about. I don't know what the big deal is. Well, the song, she messaged me and I was like, wait a minute, that's not what the song is about. The song is actually saying, you know, Black man, I can see your big red lips growing. So Bemba is really a rather pejorative term to refer to the big lips the big lips is an African feature, if you will. I myself have heard this before in Colombia, where I'm from. So that really highlights the importance and the relevance in her case, you know, in the ballroom world, which is a whole different conversation on its own, of understanding the meaning of the songs and the impact that it can have, not only on her as an instructor, but also as a participant in this community. And in our conversations, in my conversations with her, some other things that come up is the fact that usually events planners don't think of women in general, but Black women in particular, they don't think about hire them as a standalone, right? So you have to, the Black woman has to always be the companion of. It cannot be that they are, you know, the main instructor or something like that. Even people like Kimberly and Nicole here in North Carolina have highlighted the fact that it's very difficult for them to get business because they usually have to be the partner of somebody else to be able to get to land those contracts.
Well, Melissa, let's talk about some of the other ways in which that which is baked into this system in general are things that you want to illustrate and foreground. For instance, we usually think of dance being very gendered. The leader is the man, the follower is the woman. So again, here you're running up against some of what Andres was just talking about. I've got a couple of questions. Are all Latin dance styles structured that way? And then how do queer dancers fall into or disrupt this dynamic?
I don't know that they're all structured that way. There is soloist work. And so in terms of whether it's a partnership or not, there are dance styles like casino where you might switch partners as you go along. But I guess when it comes to queer folks or even just any person who wants to dance with each other, I see that there is an increase of people doing so. I can only speak to what I'm seeing in the Triangle community, since that's where I'm a member of. But, you know, Andres will often dance with other leads. And, you know, even at the language that we use, we're not using as much the ladies do this and the males do this. We say the leads do this and the follows do this. And it really creates a more inclusive language so that people who are taking classes or attending social dances get to decide which role that they want to play.
Andres, let me ask you about this pandemic and how it's affecting social dance for you and for others. How are you keeping up with the dance practice?
Oh, wow. We went from going, you know, out dancing 2-3 times per week and practicing to nothing, right? So now there's literally zero social dancing. So the way we're keeping up, one, is through the podcast, right? So trying to keep approach dancing from a different angle, but also we are indeed having very small practices with our dance company. So we're dancers from the Triangle Base called Rodgers Dance Company. So we have practices of 4 or 5 people, all masks.
Well, I want to thank you both for being on the program today, Melissa Velotas and Andres Incapié, co-host of the Mixtape Podcast. Thanks so much for being on the program.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you for having us.
You can find the Mixtape Podcast and their playlist of favorite Latin dance music on Spotify, and those links are at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, why one Mexican woman is making it known that she is not a person of color. Nationality, race, and the social imagination. Stay with us.